session number 23216, reel 7.
I think you were saying you got out to India in
November 45.
November 45. Where were you when you heard of the atomic attack on Japan? Do you remember?
Yes, I remember distinctly. This of course was in 1945, about
August 45.
August 45. Yeah. Yes, I was in a troop ship off Gibraltar. Mm. Yes.
Do you remember what your first thoughts were when you heard the news?
Thank God for that. I mean, yes, it was marvellous to know that that particular, I mean, having had lots of friends who were prisoners of war with the Japs, and having despised the Japs for their conduct there, I was absolutely delighted. I mean, a Jap life really meant nothing to me at all.
Mm. Do you think that was a general view on amongst the people you knew at the time?
Amongst people I knew at the time, rather. We all felt exactly the same. Mm. I mean, people that can behave to other human beings as the Japs behave to those prisoners of war, they deserve anything that can come their way in a bad way.
So you got to India. What happened to you when you arrived? Did you arrive at Bombay?
We arrived at Bombay. Mm.
The gateway to India.
The gateway to India, yes. Mm. And then by train down to Bangalore. Mm. And
What did you make of India when you first saw it, your first impressions?
Well, I loved it, because I'd been brought up with India a good deal, because a lot of my relations had been in India. Uh-huh. I had a relation who was the who'd been the GOCNC Eastern Command in India, and also been the Adjutant General in India, one General Sir George Barrow. And he lived to be the oldest living general. He was about 98 when he died, having set fire to himself during his afternoon naps, making his pipe in his chair. A dear little man, very small, very gallant man indeed. So, and other people as well. So I was very delighted to see India, and I got to love the Indians. They were wonderful people. And I think if I'd been a soldier before the war, I might well have asked for a secondment to the Indian Army. But that's another matter.
What was the setup at Bangalore?
Well, it was the same place as the headquarters of the Southern Command in India. And we had all these, it was an infantry officer training school. In Bangalore as well, there was an engineering officer training school as well. And so there was a certain amount of liaison with them. But we trained only British people, only infantiers, both British and Indian.
Were they trained in mixed platoons and squads?
Yes, they were all mixed up together, yes, which was very good indeed. Of course, the British cadets going to the Indian Army had to have their munchies every morning and learn Urdu.
Did the Indians have corresponding lessons in English?
I don't think they did, no. Mm. I don't think so. But they nearly all could speak English when they arrived at Bangalore. It was rather amusing because when they came almost as raw recruits as well, and we had an awful job teaching them how to march. And they'd march with their left leg and their left arm going forward together, and their right arm and their right leg. It was all very peculiar indeed. How we soon break them with that habit.
What was the course like? Was it similar to the one you had done here?
Yeah, very similar indeed. Mm. It was a 4-month course, and we had regular passing up parades, as we called them. And we had generals and so on came to take the parades all around India. Mm. At that time, Field Marshal Wavell was the Viceroy, and although of course we didn't have the Sovereign's banner, we had the Viceroy's banner, which was known as the Wavell banner, which was carried in rather the same way that the Sovereign's banner is carried here. And they were all extremely keen. The British cadets all had concentrated at a place called Rootham, down in Kent, and then came straight to us from Rootham. And we kept them there through this. Mind you, the British chaps had had a lot of training before. A lot of them were ex-rankers.
Presumably, by that time, they would virtually all have been...
They'd all served. They'd all served, yes.
Past their WASBs or whatever.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Very much so, yes. And we had quite a high-grade lot of chaps there. Mm. Oddly enough, during the course of the last... Well, it's 50 years... 55 years, I guess, since I was in India. But, I mean, I've met several chaps who were there when I was the adjutant, some of whom have done rather well for themselves, either in civilian life or in the army.
What level were you teaching them when you were doing the tactical training? Were you going up to company level?
Company level, yes. Mm. It was only company level. I mean, I didn't teach.
Would have known what was going on, obviously.
It was up to company level, yes.
What were the main functions of the adjutant?
I suppose, well, I was obviously lived in the pocket of the commandant, who was very strange. He was a Canadian called Brigadier Talbot, and he'd been in charge of state forces. And he was a very formal man. He would call everyone by their surname all the time. And he was a fairly hard taskmaster, and he would go off at a tangent some of the ways he would handle problems. And I would put him on the right track again, and he'd always accept what I'd said. Because, but I'd been around a good deal by that time, and he'd rather a narrow life.
What sort of problems arose? Could you think of an example where he was off at a tangent and you had to...
Well, a lot of it was liaising with the Indian Army, because having been in state forces, it was rather a narrow field, and he didn't have a broad enough vision, I don't think, of the Indian Army, which I was rather surprised about. And I was very quick to learn the command structure of the Indian Army, and I shared a bungalow with a chap who was in the Indian Army, a Gurkha, Bill Truss by name, and I learned a good deal from him. And he ran what was called the pre-OTS, when all the people had just arrived.
What did they do on the pre-OTS then?
Well, it was a glorified keep fit, getting people really attuned to being soldiers. And it was, I suppose, a little bit like Royal Allen Company is here now.
A bit of adventure training.
A lot of adventure training, yes, yes. And if they didn't get through that, they didn't go into the mainstream.
What about the mainstream? Was there a failure rate and a dropout rate in the mainstream, or did most people get through?
There was a small dropout rate, because I think these chaps had done training with the British Army before, and a lot of them were ex-rankers. Mm. So therefore, the actual dropout rate was fairly small. Mm. And sometimes the fitness was suspect. I had one cadet drop dead on parade one morning, on PT parade.
What was wrong with him? Did you find
out? Well, of course, it has to be a post-mortem and burial the same day. Mm. And they found out he got a congenital condition of the heart. He's never been in the army at all. Yeah. And I can remember distinctly, the chief PT instructor came and said, come quickly. His name was Onion, pronounced O'Nyan. He dropped dead. What are you talking about? So I went up there. Ever since he's lying, I said, get up, Onion. What the hell's wrong with you, O'Nyan? Mm. Stone dead. Mm. So but he climbed to the top of the rope,
yes,
and just dropped dead.
So presumably he was willing enough.
Oh, he was willing enough, yes. Mm. So I felt rather angry with myself, having spoken in rather sharply. He didn't hear me.
Of course. Did you have any other dramas while you were there? Any significance?
Yes, but there was one chap who became terribly pro-Indian before partition. A fellow called Arias, I seem to remember his name. No, Ayres, his name was. And he became a complete sort of Gandhi sort of merchant.
Indian nationalist.
And showed it. And he had to be dealt with very sharply indeed.
Mm. What happened to him?
Well, we had to get rid of him in the end. I mean, in plain clothes, he'd always wear a Gandhi cap and a sort of a lungi, that sort of thing. Really. Mm. So we had to get rid of him rather sharply.
From native.
He went native, yes, yes.
Was he RTU'd or was he sent back?
He was an instructor.
He was an instructor.
Yeah, yes, so we had to get rid of him rather quickly. Those are only two sort of...
Did you have any idea of why it was he'd been so much attracted to the Indian view of things?
I have no idea. He just fell in love with it completely. Yes. Yeah. He was a bachelor, and I don't know which Indian regiment he was in. He was certainly wasn't in the... He wasn't... He was a British... I mean, an Indian regiment.
He was a British officer from an Indian regiment.
Yes. Mm. Very strange indeed, that he was completely native. And we had to get rid of him rather sharpish. Mm. We had another officer who must be nameless. He was a Gurkha, and he married an Indian, because that was verboten in those days. We weren't allowed to do that sort of thing at all. And so, he insisted upon marrying this girl, and he left her on the church doorstep. Well, he had to be got rid of very quickly indeed, too. Mm. I mean, a terrible thing to have done.
Indeed, yes. So what sort of girl was she? Did you?
She was an Indian, as Indian girl.
Yeah.
I think she came from quite a good Indian family.
Yeah.
And he just deposited her, left her on the church doorstep.
Had he married her?
He'd married her.
He married her just left her?
Yeah, and just left her there and then, yeah. That was very difficult indeed.
Sounds very strange behaviour.
Very strange behaviour, disgraceful behaviour. Mm. Absolutely disgraceful behaviour. Mm. However, he was sent packing. And also, of course, we had the rules about sort of having affairs with other officers' wives. It was very strict in those days. Mm. And it is strict today, of course. But
not always enforced, unfortunately.
No, but now this was another thing. A highly confidential letter came down to the commandant personally, sent to all commanding officers in India. This is about the middle of 1946, saying that any officer who is cited as co-respondent in the divorce of another officer's marriage, a report would be sent immediately in manuscript to the military secretary personally. Mm. And this brought people to heal in a big way. Mm.
Had there been illicit affairs going on?
Oh, there had been, oh yes. Mm. Oh yes. There was certainly no doubt about that at all. Mm. But a lot of them didn't come to light at all.
No. I mean, presumably in some cases there was a sort of tolerance.
Oh yes, I think so, yes, mm. yes.
Like the Parisian Saint-Cassette system.
That's right.
I mean, were there other officers, do you think, who had liaisons with Indian girls?
With Indian girls? I don't remember anyone else, no. Mm. I think that was difficult, but they were terrified of being caught.
So it was a rather sensitive time, wasn't it?
Very sensitive time indeed,
the prospect
yes.
of independence yes, coming yes. up and the question of partition in the wind.
You see, and we also, because right towards the end of 1946 and beginning of 1947, mm. and we'd find in the Bangalore United Services Club, to which we all belonged and so on, so, and we used to go down there regularly. And then, of course, the national anthem was played at the end. It got to the stage then where Indians would sit down for the national anthem. And that caused a bit of a rumpus.
Yes, that must have been very difficult.
Very difficult indeed. Mm. I mean, there was one occasion which I witnessed and said nothing about it at all, but the two Indian gentlemen were taken bodily from the ballroom and thrown into the swimming pool.
Oh.
But I chose not to see that at all.
was there a level of tension in Bangalore as such?
It was starting to build up. Yeah. Mm. Yes, it was starting to build. I left just before partition took place. Yes. It was just starting to build up. Mm. And, of course, one of the things which these cadets were always taught, right from the very word go, was aid of the civil power. Mm,
riot drills, yes.
Riot drills.
Mm. I mean, would I be right in thinking that you paid more attention to that in Bangalore than you would have done at Sandhurst?
Oh, very much so. Oh, yes, mm. very much so. Mm. Well, I don't know if I've told you, when I was a cadet here, and we were given a lecture one night by Major Blundell, Hollinshed Blundell, in the gymnasium here.
Said, don't do the Amritsar thing.
Yes. Don't do as General Dyer did. That stuck with me all throughout my life.
Mm. did the cadets have any sort of role, reserve role, in the internal security plan for Bangalore?
No.
They didn't?
No.
You wouldn't have had to turn them out and...
They could have been turned out, mm. but and there was very much the case that they would have been turned out if need be. Yeah. But in the end, I don't think they were. Mm. And I'd finished my time there.
In some parts of India, the trouble was brewing much earlier than in other parts of India.
Oh, yes. In the Punjab, particularly. Yes.
I think Calcutta, too, is quite a hot spot.
Very hot spot indeed, yes.
How did you get on generally with the Indian population?
Oh, very well indeed. Mm. Very, very well indeed. Mm. I can't bear this business of this racist business. I saw very little of that. And if I saw it, you know, I'd stamped on it in a very big way indeed. Mm. And it was always rather embarrassing if you pass an Indian woman, say the wife of a bear or the wife of a muncher, on the path, she'd get off the pavement and do this with her hands as you went by. Well, I always used to salute and say good morning.
Of course.
I thought it was the courteous thing to do.
Mm. What was the discipline like? Because that would have been your main role, your formal role, in keeping discipline.
I had no problem there at all. Mm. I had a rather an indifferent sergeant major, a nice enough man, in the Somerset Light Infantry, but he hadn't got very much cover. I had him absolutely under both my thumbs like that and told him exactly what he had to do. I had no trouble in the discipline side at all. I became rather a martinet, as an adjutant should be.
Mm.
But I used to be, but I would treat the cadets in a very fair way. But if I would award them extra drills for being idle on parade or something sort of like that.
Mm. Or saying that they've been taught to salute by their nanny.
Yes. But I would go and attend punishment parades as well. Yes. Make quite certain that there was no bullying going on.
Mm.
I didn't come across any bullying at all. Because if I'd come across any bullying, that man would have been out there and then.
Mm. So how long were you in Bangalore then before your time?
18 months.
Did you have any opportunity to travel in India before you came back?
Not very much. I very much wanted to go up to the frontier, but wasn't allowed to go.
Oh.
But so I didn't really do much travelling around in India at all. Mm. I went on leave to Bombay.
Yes.
Because I had friends up there.
Mm.
But I didn't travel very much around. Mm. Oh, I went up to Utkaman, which is not very far from Bangalore.
Were you aware of the controversies about partition and the future of the Indian Army?
Yes,
time?
Very much indeed. Mm. And I made it a duty of mine to study it as
yes.
well, because I felt that I must study it. And in any case, I was very interested in it indeed.
Mm. Did it disturb the Indian cadets who you were training? Because presumably it would affect their futures if they were going to go into an army that was about to be divided between two states.
They were very concerned about it indeed. Yes. Because they weren't quite certain whether the sepoys would follow them.
Oh.
And because, you see, I mean, after all, the sepoys had been taught to be loyal to the British Raj.
Indeed, yes.
And they were bobbing a bit on that, I think, yes. Mm. But, you see, the amazing thing was that the Gurkhas took to it. As you know, the four Gurkha regiments went to the Indian Army.
Yes.
And they took immediately to their Indian officers.
Mm.
I mean, one of my Indian friends in Bangalore went to command a Gurkha battalion while I was there.
Mm.
And he had no problem at all.
Mm. Well, the Gurkha code seems to be that if your officer is your officer, you do
as you're told.
Do as you're told, yes.
Yes.
As long as he shows himself a competent officer, then he gets absolute commitment.
Yes, he was the first, the fourth. No, with the one that came to the British Army, with the second, the 6th, 7th and 10th
mm.
came to the British Army. Mm. The remainder went to the Indian Army.
Yes, first, second was British, wasn't
yes.
it?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes, yes, it was British, yes, mm. yes. So that was all very interesting indeed, but I've kept on my interest throughout that time since then in what goes on in India.
Mm.
And I was delighted when in later life I became G1 in Southeast District, which comes presumably on a later date. The general to whom I was G1 was General Werner Penfold of the Indian Army.
Mm.
He was in the 1st 11th Sikh, but became a gunner, of course, on partition.
Mm.
But he never forgot that he was an Indian Army officer.
Mm.
I learned a lot from him.
Was it certain that partition was going to happen by the time you left? Or
yes,
was that still
quite
just
certain.
It was
absolutely certain,
mm.
yes.
Mm.
But what was not foreseen was the terrible bloodbath which in fact took place.
The communal massacres.
Oh, that was terrible.
Mm.
I mean, I believe in the Punjab, the gutters were just running in blood.
Mm.
And a million
people
were killed.
Well, I don't think anybody has any idea of how many people were killed. It's just it was very, very large numbers on both
huge
sides.
Huge numbers,
yes.
Huge numbers.
Too many to count.
Oh, a total, absolute massacre.
Mm.
With a few British troops to try and stem the tide.
Mm. What happened to you then? You came back.
Then I came back.
Yes.
And I went parachuting almost immediately.
Ah, had you been recruited to become to be airborne before you got back from India, or did that happen when you arrived in Britain?
No, I was always very keen to be a parachutist.
Why was that?
I don't know why at all. But when going back on the tapes there, I think I told you that I was having trouble because of my brothers being in overseas battalions.
Yes.
I was late in going to one of
these. You weren't allowed to go to a battalion because they didn't want two brothers in
that's
the same
right.
battalion overseas.
And so that's when I marched into regimental headquarters and got seen off and sent
mm.
abroad there and then. I said, well, I want to go and join the parachute regiment.
Mm.
And that was the most terrible thing to have said.
I'm sure it was. What did they say to you when you said you wanted to?
Well, there was absolute total silence. And the regimental lieutenant, colonel turned to the regimental adjutant and said, you make certain the youngest corporal gets on the next draft. Now.
Mm. So you came back from India
I thought I was much older then.
Yes.
And I was planning my career.
Yes.
I thought I was expand.
Mm.
So I went did a 1947. Mm. I did my basic parachute course. Mm.
But then what did the Coldstream say about that?
Oh, they were quite happy about it.
They were.
Oh yes. Mm. You see, because by that time there was the Guards Parachute Battalion had been formed.
Yes.
And then that went to the Guards Parachute Company.
Yes.
And so they were, and the hell of a lot of guardsmen were in airborne forces as a whole then, particularly the parachute regiment, a lot of guardsmen. Because of General Boy Browning having recruited from the Brigade of Guards in the initial instances in 1941 or 1940. Now, that was very much accepted then, and it still is to this day.
Mm-hmm. So that was all right then. It wasn't all right earlier, but it was all right in 1947.
It was all right, yes. So I went off and did about a 4-year secondment then to the parachute regiment.
Where did you do the basic parachute training? Was this at Abingdon?
No, at Upper Heyford.
Upper Heyford.
Yes.
What did you have to do to qualify?
Eight jumps, but you had to do a lot of synthetic training to start off with.
On the Knacker Cracker.
Yeah, that sort of thing. Yes. Yeah, pretty much so. Yes, and then you did two balloon descents, one night descent, and five daylight descents. You did eight jumps in all, and then you got your wings.
Was there anything like P Company?
Oh, yes, you had to do P Company.
Before you did jumping?
I did do P Company before I went to Haver, yes. Mm. Yes.
What did they do with you on P Company in those days?
Well, exactly the same as they do now.
What, running you ragged?
Running you absolutely ragged. Mm. Log races, milling, you name it, we did it. Tremendous. That was the fittest I've ever been in my life. Mm. And none of my injuries received them. I was only 26, I was young.
Yes.
And I rarely was fit.
Mm. What sort of pass rate did they have on P Company?
When I went, I got an idea that everyone passed.
There. Everyone got through.
Because we were all sort of old soldiers, as it were, virtually.
Oh, yes.
You see?
Yes.
There were no real sort of recruit chaps at all. Mm. We were all sort of hardened soldiers. Mm. We all wore campaign ribbons, as far as I can remember.
So you did P Company, then you went off to Upper Heyford. What aircraft were you jumping out on at that time?
Dakotas.
You're going out through the sides or through the floor?
No, through the door.
Right.
And no Dakota has ever been lost through a mechanical default, only through pilot error or enemy error. Mm. It was a very safe thing to jump out on. But because you only had one parachute in those days.
Yes, no reserve.
No reserve in those days.
Were you on static line?
Yes.
Yes.
Always on static line, yes.
Mm. Other people have said that the worst thing about parachute training was the balloon jumps. Did you find that was the case?
Not very much, no. Yeah. Admittedly, you fall like a stone.
Yes.
We went no slipstream. Mm. I didn't mind at all. I mean, it was what we found when we got onto a bigger aircraft, for example, the Hastings. We had to eventually convert to Hastings about 1949 or 50 because jumping out into a two-engine slipstream was quite a performance. Mm. You were absolutely horizontal.
Blown away, I suppose. That must have made it more difficult to keep a stick together when they were descending.
Well, no, they were all counted out at the same time.
They'd
go 1, 2, 3, 4, etc.
The slipstream would have the same effect on everybody.
Oh, everyone, yes, everyone was blown away. One stage of my career, I commanded support company in one para. Now, that was all the heavy drop stuff, which dropping on platforms. By that time, we got onto Beverleys.
Yes.
And we always had to jump through the hole in the roof of the Beverley. And then, after the last man had gone, the pilot would pull the lever and all the other stuff would come tearing out of there.
Run out of the back.
Run out of the back. Mm. And that was a very pleasant jump indeed, out of the Beverley, yes. Mm. And but we went into two parachutes, but the reserve came out. We did a huge exercise in Norway in whatever the year was, it doesn't really matter. It must have been around about 1958, I think. Mm. No, before that. Anyway, and one or two, we had just been issued with a reserve parachute then, and two men, if they hadn't had a reserve, they would have cancelled. Uh-huh. Then the reserve became very popular indeed.
I bet it did, yes.
But it was very unpopular to start off with.
That's what made you more bulky.
Yeah, and also you couldn't see your feet.
Yes.
You see, that sort of thing. Mm. But there was that handle there. It was a great feeling of relief.
So you'd done P Company, you did the jumping course. And where did you go after that?
I then went to the parachute battalion. I was in the 5th battalion.
That was in 1947?
47, yes. Yeah. 5 para. Which I joined at Perham Down on Salisbury Plain. And from there we went to Germany in 1948.
And what was your role in Germany? Was it occupation?
Occupation. Mm. Yeah.
Where were you?
We were stationed at Husum, up in Schleswig-Holstein. Mm. So we were five pair. Six pair was somewhere else. We were three, but it was the old 2nd Parachute Brigade, okay, which while we were in Germany became 16th Parachute Brigade. Mm.
And what was the strength of a parachute battalion in those days?
I would think it was somewhere in the neighbourhood of about 850 chaps, I would think. Mm. Yes. I was commanding a company. Yeah.
And what sort of origins were they? Were they all on secondment when
yes, the regiment? Yes, you were all on secondment when you first went to the parachute regiment, yes. Mm. Oh, yes, we were all on secondment. You wouldn't get it actually. Parachute regiment only came in 1958, mm, then, which I transferred over then to the parachute regiment.
What were you doing actually in Schleswig-Holstein? What was the main activity?
Well, the main activity was a tremendous amount of Rhine Army manoeuvres going on, mm, and generally sort of keeping the peace as far as the population was concerned, which we didn't have much trouble doing that really. We did an enormous amount of exercises, battalion exercises, well, building up company, battalion, brigade exercises. We had one big brigade exercise.
And what sort of manoeuvres or evolutions were you practicing on those exercises at that time? Were you going to be dropped in the rear of an advancing Russian army or...?
That sort of thing. They invented scenes for us.
Yes.
Which were either written by the brigade commander or by headquarters Rhine Army, I don't know, but...
Were they envisaging operations on a battalion or brigade or divisional scale?
I think very much on a brigade scale.
Brigade scale.
We've been dropped as three battalions, yes.
Would that have been a brigade group or
yes, we were a brigade group.
Later, yes.
We were a brigade group. Mm. It was a two para brigade group, yes. And then 16 para brigade group. One night we went to bed, we were two para brigade. We wake up in the morning, we were 16 brigade.
Yes.
And then we were farther from the fifth pair, we became the second battalion. Mm.
And do you remember any of the scenarios for those exercises?
I honestly don't. I've done seven exercises since. I just can't remember them at all.
What was your own appointment then when you joined the 5th Battalion?
I was a company commander. Ah. I was appointed to command 5 para, yeah. Yes, B company, 5 para.
How does company commander compare with platoon commander?
Well, you've got three platoons under your command, and you've got subalterns under your command as well.
And I had subalterns harder to handle than sergeants and corporals?
I didn't have any difficulty at all, Nigel.
Just a theoretical question.
No, a theoretical
about
question.
The arts of command.
No, I had no problem at all. They did exactly as they were told, or else.
Mm. Was it or else often?
Not very often, no. Mm. No. It was a great thing. One would confine the subaltern to barracks for a week or doing extra, I would call extra pickets.
Yes.
You would call it orderly officer.
Yes.
Well, that's your cure them, yeah.
Or extras. Yes, yes. And had there been any significant change in the infantry tactics, you know, by the time you got to Germany? Were the sort of tactics you were training for the same as you had trained for?
I found at one stage they were rather old fashioned.
The paras were old fashioned.
No, we had oddly enough, we had one brigade commander who I think he'd been a prisoner of war a good deal of the war. It was rather difficult because he didn't quite understand some of the things which we were doing. For example, at night time he was wanting the sentries to be posted, and they'd be tied with string to the sentry, and the rest of the section have string tied round them. The sentry saw anything, he'd pull the string. Well, that didn't work at all, and I refused to obey the order, and I got marched in. And I said, why didn't you obey that? I said, for a simple reason, sir, it doesn't work in war. And I told you that from personal experience. That did it.
Yes, I bet he was pleased.
Oh, he was very pleased indeed. And I got a very bad report that year.
Oh, did you?
Yes, yes.
Did that do you any permanent damage?
No, it didn't at all. Yeah. I marched in and said, I'm not going to sign it. Yeah. Any time I ever did it.
That's two acts of mutiny, isn't it?
And so anyway, it so happened that on one particular exercise, which I got marched in about, the divisional commander, General Splosh Jones, this is in 7th Armour Division.
He was an engineer, wasn't
yes.
he?
Yes. Mm. He said to me, yes, well done, Corbell, etc., etc. So I said, well, I got this extraordinary report. I'm not signing it because the divisional commander has seen fit to compliment me on what I did in this particular exercise. Mm. And he put it to a grinding halt. And so, anyway, he set up his G1 and I got the thing rectified.